thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
Here's John Williams.
CPD. Mm-mm. I'll explain that in a minute. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Here until 3 o'clock on President's Day. Thomas Jefferson, that's your third president, you know, will join us a little after 1:30. How many radio shows today are saying that? On the one. Friend and I and a bunch of folks I know didn't plan on meeting them there, but we met a lot of our friends rather randomly at that anti-gun, anti-NRA, I'm not exactly sure what that was, rally. The rally that said we've got to do something different about gun ownership and use in this country. And some people were mad at Donald Trump, some people were mad at Congress, some people were mad at the NRA, but you got the gist of it. You knew what parade to be in if that was how you feel about these things. So there we were marching along, and there was a couple thousand of us, I would say, going up Dearborn, eventually to the Chicago River. We would cross the river if we could have to then probably finish the rally and do some chants. That's kind of all you got at a parade and rally like this in front of the Trump Tower. That was the obvious focal point of this thing. But the Chicago police wouldn't let the rally, the parade, if you will, cross the river and go to the north side where the tower is. So on the south side of the river, in front of the tower, people were able to sort of stage their little chants and all of that sort of thing. So march up Dearborn and go there. As we were marching along, there was a guy who was walking on the sidewalk along with us, but he was not with us, and he was trolling the whole parade. So he was just in anybody who would like to engage in him, having a running argument with folks, just saying, oh yeah, well, you people, blah blah blah. And some people were yelling back at him, but mostly people, when they started to realize what this guy was doing, they would just start to chant, you know, no more guns, or NRA boo, guns suck, whatever they had. We never really latched onto the perfect chant, to be honest with you, but that's beside the point. But they would sort of drown him out and move on, and then he'd walk ahead or slower and find another group of people. And for the entire parade, he just ripped on these people, and they gave it back to him. It was a point of tension that could get away from all of us. And the Chicago police were there, as you might imagine, and I just thought it was so interesting how they managed that situation. They didn't say a word to us, and they didn't say a word to this guy, and he walked the whole route. All they did was ride their bicycles a little in front of and a little behind him. I thought it was such great policing, because this man's right to free speech and expression was 100% protected by these guys. They took no position on what he was doing. And they 100% were protecting the marchers from this guy who was very angry at them. And the whole time, invisible but not invisible at all, they just rode their bikes within 10, 15 feet of him so that if anything got out of hand, they were there. And on the weekend where we honored Commander Bauer and really all of the men and women that serve in the Chicago Police Department or police departments anywhere, I could not help but notice and be thankful for the work that the cops do. So that story's moved on, and Commander Bauer is going to leave the front and second pages of the newspapers in your consciousness, but maybe we should always just keep moments like that in mind where something like that happens and you go, son of a gun, I don't want to be out here. And I don't want to be the guy that has to get involved in that, but that's their job. That's what they get up and do every single day. And they were doing it so well that I wanted to make sure you knew about that. So thanks to the CPD today. Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States of America, will join us a little after 1:30. We will play for him Fergie's national anthem. Steve, Violetta, have you all, LFIB, what's the consensus here? My wife sent me a text today. She goes, oh my God, what a ridiculous national anthem. I said, oh my God, I thought it was awesome. Bertrand, national anthem, Fergie, go.
I would say, nice try.
Padre Medic, go.
It was just too much, but I liked certain parts of it.
Garris, yes, no, what?
Nice try, but no.
I'm kind of in the minority.
I mean, she looked good, though.
She did. To be honest with you, I'm not sure that this was her intent, but I think this is, it might have been, this is what happened to me. She looked good. She looked a little sexy, as she does. She's Fergie, and And the whole performance was a little flirty.
Yeah, it was a little bit Marilyn Monroe.
Totally.
Singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President.
Totally agree with you on that. And we'll have a conversation later on about if that's the appropriate thing to channel when you're doing it. But I just say, as a male reacting to that, certain chemicals were firing in my brain that I couldn't control.
I'm sorry, I do not look at the singing of the national anthem as a sex event, so I didn't have the same as a male.
Well, aren't we special?
I mean, listen to you. You're like, well, she was burning hot.
You
so.
Don't have a bass, so you don't have a brain stem?
Like I think the whole Rockets Red Glare thing?
I was like, yeah! Rockets!
Come on, baby, light my fuse!
I just got goosebumps. I thought it was so well sung.
Sure, and that's what you can call it, goosebumps.
You're starting to sound like Leslie Jones, who's been commenting on the Olympics and on the men's bodies, who are bobsledding.
Yeah, they wear those skin-tight neoprene outfits.
I was honoring my country when I was listening to it.
Fine.
And then making fun of her.
I'm WGN King John on Facebook. The video is there, and your comments are too. A couple of things I want to talk about in this half hour, including that. But before we do any of that, we said that today would be the day that we would close the entries, if you will, for your chance to do something fun. John and David's Excellent Adventure is Thursday night. That's David Hochberg, that guy whose commercials you hear, and I have cooked up something special and a surprise. And we're going to do it with you on Thursday night if you are one of the lucky 10 people selected. To get selected, all you have to do is like or share the post that's on my Facebook page. There I am in a short video explaining it as best I can. So, David, I think we said we were going to close it at on Monday, but let's wait until 3 o'clock to give people one last chance, all right?
I think that's a great idea, and I just want to thank the hundreds of people that have already gone and watched it and liked it and shared it. It's going to be a great night.
It's only 90 seconds long, I think, my little video, our video. I mean, there I am. You pop in, and we just vaguely say, hey, you want to roll the dice and do something really fun Thursday night? We're going to do it. It won't cost you a nickel, and it'll be really special. Something going on Thursday night we're going to do, and we're taking 10 of you with us for free. And then if you come up with any other clever ideas, like, hey, that was fun. One guy said, hey, let's all go do a thing where we stand out on that glass step outside of Sears or the John Hancock. It's the Sears Tower, right? Willis Tower? It's got that step out there. Somebody wants us to get that and all go out on that. I'm not sure I want to do that, but that could be a thing. If somebody else wants us all to go bowling one day or night, I don't care. But if you've got some fun John and David's Excellence Adventures ideas, we're up for it. You can post them on my Facebook page. But if you want to be considered for this one, which will be a bit of a mystery, we will reveal what it is after 3 o'clock today. And if you're one of the lucky 10 people, we'll call you, tell you what it is, and if you can come along, do. If not, we'll move on to the next person. We'll get 10 of you out of that group randomly. But your suggestions are welcome there as well. All right, David.
Just a sidebar, John. We're going to take pictures and do a Facebook Live video from the location.
Ah, yeah.
Where we're going to be Thursday. And so the people that unfortunately weren't able to join us this time
we'll
can
get to
follow along.
Yeah,
food has been ordered. Beverages have been ordered. Everything is all set and ready to roll.
Yeah, that's it. So if you're like, I don't know, what do you guys got up your sleeve? Just watch on Facebook Thursday night or check my Facebook page after Thursday, maybe sometimes Friday, and you'll be able to see the video that we post there. Well, this is your idea, David. Thank you. I'm excited about it because I know what we're going to do. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll connect on Thursday for sure. But you, the listener, have until 3 o'clock this afternoon to like or share that post, and you'll automatically be considered to randomly join us.
Anticipation is killing me. What is it?
Should we invite Violetta? There's only room for so many. My son wants to come too, but I don't know, David. What are we going to do about that?
I think if Violetta would like to join us, I could make an executive override decision because she's been where we've had are going, and she's had great times there before.
Yeah, but I don't know that she's officially liked or shared the video.
Oh,
so
I'll go right now. Okay. I see what it takes. I'm going to the Facebook page.
All right, that's it. I'm done talking about it for now. Thank you, Mr. Hochberg.
Take care, buddy.
That's David Hochberg, Pearl Mortgage, Inc. It's 117 on WGN. If you have not yet, I would recommend you get the print edition of today's Chicago Tribune. There they have the portrait of every single president, 1 to 45. They took 3 pages to print them. And then they have some commentary about the Obamas, which made news last week. And on President's Day, they said it's appropriate that we just take a look at them all, remember them, and think about them. Thomas Jefferson will join us at 1:35. Also on my Facebook page, incidentally, we have two other things that you'll probably appreciate. One is producer Griffin's seven latest films. He's watching a movie every day of the year this year. He's going to have 365 under his belt on New Year's Eve. His reviews are posted, and we're also asking you for suggestions of films he should watch. And the NRA score sheet was shared over 100 times on Saturday and Sunday. It's how our state, no, our federal lawmakers, the Illinois delegation, it's how much money they got from the NRA PAC and what their NRA score is. We told you how to reach them and tell them, good job, keep it up, or we need to think differently about it. Either way, there's the contact information, and it's ready for your sharing. If you haven't heard that national anthem, I'll play part of it in just a minute. When Fergie started singing last night, you knew it was not your father's Oldsmobile.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Right then and there, you went, oh, well, this is different. And then towards the end, did it get a little too flirty? Yeah, I'm feeling you, Violetta. That did channel Marilyn Monroe a little bit there, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. It's
the falsetto.
Sexy jazz number.
By the way, we did do a quick mashup. This is cut three, Elif, of Marilyn Monroe and Fergie. Could have thrown it in there. It would have felt right at home. So my opinion about this was, as you've probably been able to tell, that I think that you should not disrespect the country or the flag, the song or the people. I don't think her song did any of that. I think it was appropriate for the venue and the event. The players don't take the game seriously. It's an exhibition basketball game.
Do they start at 100 points in that game?
What was the final score on that?
232 to...
No, it was not. What was it? I mean, it was.
I didn't see a single solitary minute of it.
My son texted me and said, "Hey, you watching the game?" And I said, "Nah, I'm watching the Olympics or whatever else I was watching." But it's, you know, it's just not that fun to watch to me because it's just the guys running up and down the floor goofing around. Had I known Fergie was going to do this, I would have watched. Here's what you put on my Facebook page. Patty said it was cool, bluesy rendition, and it was Fergie. But Evelyn said, it just sounded odd, and it made me want to laugh. John said, sorry, she sang it as if she had no idea as to the meaning and reverence of the lyrics. Susan said, she looked to have taken the task seriously. I feel bad for her. Thomachin said, Roseanne Barr was better. Beth said, disrespect, perhaps not. Off key, definitely. Brenda said, to each his own, but I thought this was silly. Ernie said, disrespectful? No. Don the Con, messing up with our country. I'm cleaning your post up here, Ernie. Ernie said, Fergie, disrespectful? No, but the president is disrespectful to this country every damn day. There's a sort of summary. Ann said, it was just awful. I'm not a fan. Chris said, I don't believe she intended any respect, but it was executed poorly. And Audrey said, she made a spectacle of herself, in my opinion. It's not supposed to be about the singer, but about the union of our country. What did you think? I thought it was pretty. Why am I always the outlier? Maybe because I am. Joe, you're on WGN. What did you make of Fergie's national anthem at the All-Star game?
It felt like a knitting needle going through my eardrums. My God, that thing was horrible. I mean, it was like, was she Michelle Pfeiffer? Was she on a piano as Fabulous Baker Boys? They were ridiculous. Now, yeah. What I had to do to cleanse myself of that is to go listen to Marvin Gaye's version from the 1983 NBA All-Star Game, and that is a version that people should listen to. This was ridiculous. Sorry, John.
By the dawn's early
You like this one better?
Oh, my God, man. Soulful. I mean, the whole place was... Listen to the end of that when they all started applauding. It just goes right to your heart.
I'll say this. At the end of Fergie's rendition, and here I am more or less defending it, Rolling Stone called it disgraceful. But at the end of it, the Fergie edition, the crowd did not erupt with approval. You could tell that it was a little bit of a clunker because even that, you know, jazzed up hip hop, let's just have a good time crowd, they didn't roar their approval after she got done singing it.
But what did they do after Marvin sang it?
Yeah.
They got on their feet. It was unforgettable.
Crowd's already into it. It's 127. This is WGN. I'm John Williams, the third president of the United States. Thanks for the phone call, Joe. I'm glad you remembered that. The third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson. He joins us on stage frequently when he comes to Chicago. We'll ask him on the phone a couple of questions about A, that rendition, B, his portrait and the Obamas for that matter, C, gun legislation and what they had in mind when they wrote that Constitution of ours.
Did you see the Tribune today ran all the portraits of the presidents?
You were switching out with Pam when I brought it up.
I'm sorry.
Fair enough. I thought it was really a good idea, don't you?
Absolutely. It makes the Obama picture fit in so much more.
Better than I thought.
Yeah.
Because my memory, if you will, of the portraits would be black background, oil painting, stiff guy, ramrod straight up, right?
How about the one of Richard Nixon? It looks like it's a Match.com picture. His head on his chin.
It was so friendly. You go, what a good guy. What could go wrong here? That is his Match.com picture.
If I had one when I was president.
The Bill Clinton one I don't exactly understand. Talk about artsy fartsy.
Well, I think that speaks to the, you know, he was very...
It's a pixelated
hard to
picture
understand,
of him.
Right?
Maybe that's the
a lot
idea
of different
there.
Versions of him.
Bush 43, really friendly, folksy, sitting on a sofa.
Which is so interesting because he was the guy who insisted everyone wear a jacket and tie in the Oval Office.
He was very formal. Here he is.
His official portrait is open collar shirt.
Yeah, not even a tie. His dad certainly has one. His dad's the classic one that you might imagine. His dad standing up, hands on the back of a chair, fireplace in the background. That's his father. That's Gerald Ford. That's essentially Jimmy Carter,
but
Dwight
even,
Eisenhower.
Even Kennedy is a little more impressionistic, wasn't it? I don't have it in front of me.
You're absolutely right. Elaine de Kooning's Oil on Canvas 1963 is Kennedy with bunches of splashes of paint, green and yellow in the background. Very, very different. All in today's Chicago Tribune. I'm looking again, like you said, at the Chicago Tribune perspective.
I know. It was really, I'm so glad they did that.
They've got three full-color pages here, pictures of the official portraits of our 45 presidents. And number 37, Richard Nixon, is so his Match.com picture.
He's much handsomer there than I think he ever really was.
And friendly, and he's got sort of a soft smile on his face, his hand in his chin looking at you going, hey, can I get you a drink?
All he needs is a cardigan wrapped around his shoulders. And maybe, you know, fast forward to the early 80s, flip up his collar on a neon pink shirt. That's what he looks like.
Enjoys long walks.
Right.
And listening to tapes of my enemies.
He's a person who's into people.
By the way, one of the president's official portrait has him smoking. And that president is?
Fergie, smoking hot? No.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt
really?
Has that stem cigarette holder of his.
No.
And he's holding that.
And he's got like a lot of extra hands in that painting.
Right. So while he is on the top half of the page, the bottom third of it or so are a bunch of sort of different versions of what his hands are doing, holding a pencil, holding their own selves, smoking.
So the point of it, though, is so it doesn't look... So then when you consider President Obama sitting in the outfield at Wrigley Field, it's not outrageous.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it just kind of... each painting has its own sort of unique approach. Well, I mean, some of them do anyway.
Steve, President Thomas Jefferson is joining us now, the third president of the United States. President Jefferson, are you there?
Good day to you, citizen.
Hey, listen, our local newspaper, President Jefferson, the Chicago Tribune has printed the official portraits of all of the presidents. There's Washington, there's Adams, there's you.
That's true. I was painted by a number of different individuals in the course of my life, and I imagine one of those paintings is now being used in a different form.
Well, this is Mather Brown, Oil on Canvas. Looks like it was painted in 1786, and there you are with a really frilly shirt Just a lot going on there with one of these flouncy, bouffanty, enormous things, a black jacket, and then white curls in your hair, what you might imagine, if you haven't looked at it yet, of a George Washington portrait. But that's not your hair, is it?
No, that portrait was painted when I was in Europe. I was the American ambassador to France between 1784 and 1789, and I went to England to meet with John Adams, who was the ambassador to England, and I was painted there by Mather Brown. That portrait, I have to say, is the least representative of me. It makes me something of a European dandy.
Yeah,
I was dressed as a diplomat then, but I would not have ever worn such clothing in the United States.
Yeah, you don't look happy at all either. I got to tell you, you're not smiling. This does not pass the "do I want to have a beer with this guy" test. Let me tell you, fella.
Well, it would have had to be wine.
Yeah, that's beside the point here. Mr. Jefferson, have you had a chance to see the Obama portraits? Because that's really why I think we're all sort of focusing on the representation of these presidents here. What do you think of the Michelle and Barack Obama portraits?
Well, I'm still trying to get used to the idea that you elected an African-American to be the president of the United States. That would have been regarded as an absolute impossibility in my own lifetime between 1743 and 1826. But as portraits go, it seems unnecessarily pastoral to me.
Well, that's ironic coming from you, the great agriculturalist. You were the one that wanted all of us to be farmers and grow our own food, right?
I'm guessing that Mr. Obama has never grown a rutabaga.
I don't think he has, but he's ordered them at some of the finest restaurants in Chicago. And then the other thing about this is that it sort of shows you as, let me look at it again, just sort of looking off in the distance, a little sad, to be honest with you. Your picture is a little melancholy. How would you like to be remembered? If I were going to draw something from your countenance, what would you prefer it be, sir?
Well, I think the melancholy certainly is not the right descriptor for me. That's certainly true of that painting. But, of course, a photograph is different from a painting. A painting involves the interpretation by the artist. I would like to be known as America's greatest optimist. I believed in the future. We had the entire West in front of us. We had 3,000 miles of moat between us and the madness of the old world. I believe that people are capable of self-government and that humankind will progress using reason and science until we reach something like utopia on Earth. And so I would like any portrait of me to show a man of confidence, but confident not about myself, but about the future of our great Republican experiment.
Fast forward to 2018. I'm still optimistic, but I know a lot of people who aren't. I wonder what President Jefferson's take is on this country today.
Well, of course, I died well before the Civil War, and so I didn't get to see it. But when I look at it from the outside, I see unbelievable prosperity. You know, most of the problems of life that we suffered, famine, disease, childhood maladies that we didn't even understand, much less have medicine to take care of, most of the things that would have bedeviled life in my era, hygiene, you know, public sewers, water supplies, how people lighted their homes after dark, how people kept warm enough in the winter, whether there was an adequate food supply. Those things that were the main problems of my era have all but disappeared in your time. And when I look around at your world, I see just unbelievable amounts of prosperity and material success. And so I can only congratulate you on that part of the American dream. Whether you're still a free people and still love liberty and limited government, that's a whole different question.
Wonder what shocks you the most then today, if limited government is your definition of real democracy or real America. What's most shocking to you about the size and breadth of our government today?
Well, of course it's size, but I think the thing that would appall me is your national debt. You know, of all the presidents that you've talked about, 45 of them by now, I'm the one that was most concerned about a national debt and budgets that didn't add up. In fact, I wanted a constitutional amendment to require a balanced budget. And so when I look at your indebtedness, I see what happened to England in my own time that was eventually eaten up by its national debt and a loss of greatness because of it. And the second thing that really troubles me is how many military bases and troops you have around the world, more than 700.
Yeah.
I wanted us to use the Atlantic Ocean as a permanent moat and to mind our own business and have no forward military in the world whatsoever, only a defensive navy and a tiny army in the American West. And so that, the idea that you become the policeman of the world and seem quite happy about it, that would have upset any one of the founding fathers, even Hamilton, but it would have stopped me.
Hey, by the way, I saw that Hamilton a couple weeks ago. Have you seen Hamilton yet? I know you saw the original.
I'm talking about Hamilton, yes.
I'm talking about the musical. Have you seen that yet?
No, I have not.
Oh, my gosh.
Should I, sir?
Everybody should but you. I think you're the only American in history, today, past, present, future, who should not see Hamilton. Because you come across, first of all, I got to tell you, I was a little upset with you, the representation of you. You weren't a big enough part of the story. You were his nemesis in many ways. I know that this particular story of Hamilton isn't about Hamilton Jefferson. It's about Hamilton Burr, but I think Jefferson has to play a larger role. And you came across as kind of silly and dandyish and, I don't know, insignificant. Let me put it that way.
Well, it's about Mr. Hamilton, of course. You can't have both of us in equal measure in something that purports to be a celebration of Colonel Hamilton. I'll only say this. I wasn't a dandy. I dressed down. I was a very scientific and rational man, and as president, I greeted foreign dignitaries in my house slippers at the White House.
Outrage.
But it did outrage the British minister, a man named Anthony Mary, and his wife, who was something of a virago. But I should warn you, this Hamilton wanted a constitutional and, if possible, hereditary monarchy in the United States. He said that the people, that is the people who are listening to you at this moment, were incapable of self-government, that they're childlike, that they were a beast, that they had such immaturity that they must be governed by men like himself. He wanted the president to serve for life, the Senate to serve for life. I don't think this is someone that the American people should actually have much respect for. He would have been an extraordinary prime minister of England, but he was a very poor American, in my view.
President Thomas Jefferson's on the phone. It's 1:48. I want to seriously talk to you about guns in this country and what the Founding Fathers thought then and what they would think about what's going on today. Before we do that, we're going to play a quick commercial break and then come back and sort of separate these two parts of the conversation. So as I get to that commercial break, I also just want to play for you 12 seconds of Fergie singing the national anthem and get Thomas Jefferson's reaction to this.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Dig. What do you think of that, President Jefferson?
It makes you wish the British had won.
Okay, it's 1:50. We'll pause here and then come back with a more serious side of the Thomas Jefferson conversation on WGN. Thomas Jefferson's on the phone. Somebody texted and said, hey, what do you remember about the giant cheese that somebody sent you? Give me a short answer to that, sir.
Made in Massachusetts. It weighed 1,235 pounds, I believe. It was the idea of a pastor by the name of John Leland. And it was delivered to me in the White House in 1802. It was the world's largest cheese, and my enemies, the Federalists, called it the mammoth cheese because they knew that I loved the paleontological work that was unearthing mastodons and mammoths.
Oh, I get it. 1,000 pounds of cheese. So did you hand that out to everybody, or what do you do with 1,000 pounds?
What do you do with 1,000 pounds? You know, we had no refrigeration, and so I served it. I opened the White House twice per year, on New Year's and the 4th of July, as a general public reception, and we served it. The cheese lasted for several years, and people begged to see it. We would cut off the rotten parts of it. That's, of course, how cheese was used until the age of refrigeration, and then we would serve the rest. But it took 4 or 5 years to get rid of the thing.
Had Triscuits been invented yet?
we could only wish. You know, I gave away chunks of this thing. You know, when it's the world's largest anything, it's probably not great cheese.
Yeah. The country is reeling after two shootings. Obviously, the Florida one here in Chicago, a beloved police commander was shot recently as well. And I wonder what our country got wrong about what the founding fathers intended for our ownership of guns.
Well, two things, I think. First of all, I'm an advocate of the Second Amendment. I understand that we have the right to keep and bear arms. But two historical notes. One is that it was intended to prefer a militia, a people's army, a set of minutemen, over a permanent military establishment. So if you look at it closely, its purpose is to make sure that you have a citizenry that can defend ourselves from invasion. And that's the point of the Second Amendment. Secondly, a high-tech weapon in my time was a musket or a pistol that took 30 or 40 seconds to reload. So think of that. The best pistols, the best rifles of my era took at least half a minute to reload. And so ask yourself of this or any other shooting of this sort in your time, how many shots would this person have gotten off using the weapons that were the basis of the Second Amendment, which was ratified on December 15, 1791. Yeah. In other words, technologies change the dialogue. They change the debate.
You and I have 60 more seconds to talk about this. We'll have a better conversation about it on stage soon. But I wonder if the Founding Fathers, and you didn't write the Constitution and weren't there when they did, but I wonder if the idea was the citizenry should be armed so as to protect itself from its own government, an oppressive government, or should we all be armed in case Canada decides to invade us and we need to ward them off? Because we already have an army strong enough to ward off Canada and China. I wonder if we should all be armed, though, in your estimation, to protect ourselves from our own government.
Well, yes, I believe in the right to revolution, and of course you can't bring down a government with pitchforks. So that's certainly part of this equation, and we need it for home defense. You know, the constables can't always arrive in time, and we were killing varmints in my era. We were killing wolves and coyotes and so on. But I think that in your time, now that you have widespread mayhem, you need to rethink just who has weapons of what sort and under what circumstances. I still believe in the Second Amendment, but if you cling to the past in this way, making it a kind of a mythology and a sacred text that can't be touched, you may be doing yourselves a national disservice.
Happy President's Day to you, Thomas Jefferson. I always enjoy your conversation, sir.
Remain optimistic and read books, sir.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
50.
Here's John Williams.
Don't adjust your sets. What did you say the current temperature is here in America?
It's 53 degrees.
53 degrees. I'll tell you what. Let's play the temperature game after the 2:30 news. You'll do those temperatures, and then you'll quiz me on one of them, and then I'll guess. It'll be a lot of fun.
I might be leaving early today.
Stick around, Steve. We'll play the temperature game, and America will rejoice at the large numbers. Patty Vasquez, who's on pretty late on WGN Radio, is in our studio.
It's not very late. It's not too late. It's just pretty late.
We like to invite Patty in once in a while just to sort of say hi to our friend and make sure you keep abreast of what's going on in the evenings on this fine radio station.
Thank you.
She ran over to Argo to get some coffee for us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have I caused a mess over there for you?
And then I said, well, that's good because I've got some Thin Mints from the Girl Scouts in my bag here. But something's happened to my Thin Mints. They have all congealed into a sort of a thin column. It's more like a thin brick instead of a thin mint. And so we've been sort of hammering them into chunks. I've got like a thin hoagie is what I have here, but it's delicious with the coffee.
Over a lifetime of both having sold Girl Scout cookies and now consuming them for more than half my life, I've never seen this happen to a thin mint before.
It's
a little sad.
I was enjoying some gummy bears over the weekend, and as I was anticipating and then eating them, I thought, you know, John, when these gummy bears are done, that is after you've eaten the six of them that you have in your mouth now, you're going to wish that you hadn't done this. So why are you caving into the desire to do it right now?
Did you really have regret? You had pre-regret and then you had regret? Did you regret regretting?
Because I thought, well, I am going to brush my teeth soon and I'll bet I'll survive this. But I thought over the course of my lifetime, when I die someday, will I look back and say, I'm glad I had all those Thin Mints and gummy bears, or will I wish I hadn't?
I think it's about spending time with your family and eating gummy bears and Thin Mints.
And I was doing it by myself, eating the gummy bears, if you just joined us. And so I thought, well, really, I would prefer to have looked back on my life or maybe any given weekend and not have eaten the gummy bears and Thin Mints.
I think you're overthinking it. You're taking the joy out of Thin Mints.
Yep.
Yeah, I am.
And gummy bears.
You're ruining it for everybody now.
I was having a gin and tonic at the time, too, by the way, if we're going to go down that road.
But no regrets on the gin and tonic?
No, you got to have those.
All right, then.
What are you doing on the radio this evening?
We've got food and music coming in tonight, so I'm sort of excited about that because it sort of breaks things up. We have so many difficult stories to talk about, and I think it's kind of nice to sort of talk about what's also great about the city, which is our, you know, food and music.
Are you focusing on a particular restaurant or something like that, per se?
I don't believe I know the name of the restaurant, but I shall pull that up for you right now.
We went to a place called the Opera House in Plainfield with my folks on Saturday night, and they've taken the old Opera House in Plainfield, and good Lord, did they do a beautiful job.
That sounds wonderful.
It's this old opera house, and it's got a lively bar scene downstairs, and we ate on a higher floor, but... It's just a gorgeous building, and kudos to the folks in Plainfield for having such a really impressive place to have dinner. It's 212 on WGN. By the way, I'm going to talk about this in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play some audio for you, and don't worry, it's not Fergie. Although, by law, all radio people have to have an opinion about Fergie today. And I'm the only one who seems to be... Cochran was this morning not all upset about it. I actually liked it. What was your view?
By the way, I also thought that the last note that she hit, I thought that the end of it was great. I thought Violetta said something interesting that when men do something a little bit bluesy or kind of soulful, it's interesting. But when women do it, and I'm rephrasing, so I'm not sure, Violetta, but that it's kind of too sexy or inappropriate.
Yeah, right.
Why? I mean, like men, it's just weird that we think that way. Or is it just Fergie in particular or women in general?
I think it's women in general.
Really?
That's my view of what she was. I mean, to the degree that what Violetta said resonated with me, I thought that was it. It's not just about Fergie. It's about
women stay in their box.
I think there's a little bit of that. So then there was Elif, our producer, going, well, this is a sexist conversation. And I said, well, it most certainly is. Welcome to the United States of America.
Well,
I mean, that's
just
the way it is.
Women should stay in their box. What I was saying is you feel more uncomfortable when a woman does something soulful because all of a sudden you're like, is that sexy?
We played Marvin Gaye. We play Marvin Gaye and everybody goes, now that's a good version.
Right.
You do Fergie and you go, oh my God, this is disrespectful. I mean,
I guess we come across as sounding slutty.
Marvin Gaye's version. Well, it's just so true. Look, a strident woman is a bitch, and a strident man is a courageous, strong leader.
You looked right at me, Elif. Did you see that?
Did not.
Because of your reaction, and I started cracking up, so I looked at you too.
Wasn't about you, ladies. You know what I'm saying.
So it's the way we all interpret it as a whole, rather than a particular comment on.
To the degree that you all are saying that this is unequitable or inequitable, I say you're right. I say you're right. It is what it is. By the way, so here is a woman who was a New York woman was berating a flight attendant. There was video made of this as they were getting into their seats on this United or Delta flight. Elif, it was a
Delta
flight. Mm. The woman works for
Governor Cuomo.
So she works for Governor Cuomo. She's getting on her seat. You know, everybody's fighting with the bags overhead and babies are crying and folks are frustrated. America has not figured out how to get on airplanes. And when I get to be king, I'm going to tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to say not everybody in row 30 or row 1 go first. We're going to say everybody with an A seat go first. You can set 30
windows.
People down. All 30 of them will go. Nobody's going to be in their way because you put them in order. And then they all go to the window. Boom. And then the middles go. Boom. We could do this in half the time if we would just do it that way.
But if you're traveling with somebody who's sitting in the other two seats, they have to wait for the next round of seating?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. So you don't stand there with your spouse. And if you have small kids, shut up.
Wasn't sure. I just wanted to get the clarification. Yeah. Okay. So
they're getting on the thing.
Yes.
The woman that works for Governor Cuomo, and evidently she's important, or she certainly thinks she is chirping off at the woman in the seat across the aisle from her with the baby. The baby's crying, and she says something like, I hope that kid isn't going to be crying the whole flight.
Great. Off to a good start.
Let's pick it up from there.
Oh, Governor, can I take some after my dinner. I'm not sitting here crying.
He's not going to cry the whole time.
Put your pajama on the next flight. What? Put your pajama on the next flight. No, I can't. I have to. I'm going to put you on the next flight.
Okay, so
that's a lot of assuming.
That's okay. So the woman says the baby's not going to cry the whole time. The flight attendant comes in and she says, "Well, we can put you on the next flight," to the woman that works for the governor.
Take your chances on that one, lady.
And she says, "No, that's not going to work out." So the other woman you heard said, "Well, the baby won't cry the whole time," but she's kind of disgusted and she tosses her thing in there. So the flight attendant says, "Well, we can put you on the next flight," and she says, "No, I can't." And then the woman who's upset says to the flight attendant, "I want your name." And the flight attendant says, "It's Tabitha." And she says, "Thank you, Tabitha. You may not have a job tomorrow."
Ah, jeez.
And the flight attendant then says to somebody off camera, "I want this woman off the plane." Boom! Drop the mic!
What?
And then the passenger says, "No, no, I can't. Did you guys not remember? I'm somebody important." She says, "No, I can't, Tabitha. I apologize. I apologize." She apologizes three times. The flight attendant says, "You just screamed at this woman and her baby."
Mm-hmm.
That is not captured on the video. But I think the passenger is suddenly realizing who has the real power here. And so the passenger then, this woman, says, "I apologize. I have to be on this flight. I'm not screaming. I'll be quiet now, please. I'm really stressed out. Please, Tabitha, thank you." And Tabitha has her kicked off the plane.
Oh, really? Even after the begging?
Here's my question for you. Because we have this video because the woman with the crying baby was taking video on her phone. And then she posts it. So who is the bad person here? The woman that works for the governor of New York, who's doing the power trip and talking snarky. The flight attendant who, while the lady maybe was being snarky, dropped an atom bomb on her and said, "You're kicked off the plane." Or the woman who took the video and posted it on the internet. And that woman is now suspended with or without pay. I'm not sure, but she may lose her job.
Wow.
So who was the real heavy in this?
I think the woman who works for the governor's office escalated it. Once you escalate it, it's hard to bring that. It's hard to get that horse back in the barn, as it were.
I don't think the lady, the flight attendant, Tabitha, needed to kick her off based on what we saw. But, too bad for you. Look, we're all getting in a big old aluminum tube and going 30,000 feet in the air. Everybody has to compromise and cooperate. And if you can't do that on the ground, mm-hmm. we can't fix that up there.
Exactly. And when someone tells you who they are, believe them. That lady up front said who she was going to be for the flight.
What do you mean?
She's going to be difficult. Complaining about the baby.
Oh, yeah,
demanding names, wanting the baby to be,
Yeah, we don't want that upstairs, so you get to get kicked off. Now, the lady posts that. And, she really doesn't need to post that because think about this. So then you fly. She gets kicked off. You fly somewhere. Then you land. You've got this awesome video. Boy, I'm going to get a lot of hits with this. You post that on YouTube. Why? Why are you posting that? How does that fix that moment you had on the airplane?
Yeah. No, she's still upset about it. Feels like she's going to get some sort of justice, I guess, some sort of revenge.
Okay. So now you're going to get fired. Now that lady's going to get fired. Is that what you want? And by the way, this woman who posted the video said, "I didn't want her to get fired." But what that could well happen in this day and age.
Now you can't unring that bell. See how many metaphors I'm going to use? Cannot unring the bell. Yeah.
I've got in my mind, you can ring my bell, 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 ring my bell.
Yeah.
Which is in a pretty good commercial right now.
We've all taken this to where we want to put things online and shame other people somehow. And
I am so not a public shamer.
I just posted a video not too long ago. I was rear-ended by somebody who had not cleared off their car, and they were driving with their windshield completely covered in snow.
Oh, yeah.
And he got out and was like just standing there. It always cracks me up or amazes me how many people will hit you from behind, rear-end you, and then blame you.
Oh, really? He was giving you grief about this?
Oh, yeah. He was giving us grief about it. Yep. He was anyway, I shouldn't. My lawyers have told me not to talk about it too much on the air.
Okay, but you've got video of this.
I did videotape him just standing there. I asked him, "Why are you driving?" He was rolling through a parking lot. My husband saw him and said, "Oh, look at this guy. He's just driving with his windshield covered."
And bam.
And he thought the guy was pulling into the lot to clear off the snow.
Mm-hmm.
We were leaving the lot. He pulled up behind us in the exit ramp of the parking lot, and we had a car stopped in front of us. We had nowhere we could go. My husband tried honking to the car in front of him to alert the car behind behind us. The guy had nothing. I'll show you the picture in the
video.
Like,
here it comes. You saw it coming and banged your head.
Well, Steve saw it coming. I was like,
did you post it on social media then?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy just standing there. I had to ask him several times, why are you driving like this?
We asked, okay, so who's...
So I publicly shamed him.
Who's the heavy on this? The passenger, the flight attendant, the woman that took the video, or Patty Vasquez, who... outed somebody in a parking lot that ran into her.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2:21. Now, we're getting some phone calls on this, too. And I want to ask you a couple of other questions. Oh, gosh, I'm now watching. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's not just that he had it on his windshield.
No, it's like...
He had 2 feet of snow stacked up on his hood.
It's so absurd. I mean, that's partly why I showed it, was the absurdity of it.
This is... Okay, and this is a little different.
Everyone thinks that it fell off the roof of his car, his truck, when he was rolling or stopped. No, we saw him moving
like
that.
Oh, my God.
And we blocked him until the police came, because we were like, you cannot drive. He was going to go on to Oakton near Milwaukee. No, no, no.
I think what he was hoping was that as he's driving, it'll blow off. But that was 2 feet of heavy snow.
Yeah.
It's 2:21. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You can call or text that number. Patty Vasquez is on tonight. What time did they put you on this radio?
11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Thank you very much.
That's pretty late, Patty Vasquez.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty late with Patty Vasquez tonight on WGN. As somebody said, any one of these things would be spectacularly bad for any given president. But as it turns out, if you do something like that every single day, then we can hardly keep up, and the impact of any of them is minimized. So it's one thing to be bad, but if you're really bad all the time, then it's not as bad. I'll let you think about that at home before we go to that in great detail after the 2:30 news. What are you doing now?
I'm just looking at some of the video from my car accident.
Patty Vasquez.
And posting a picture of us.
See, so now, I mean, here I am decrying public shaming, which is what you did.
I did.
But now I'm thinking, hey, would you share the video with me? I'll put it on my page.
But, I mean, how do you not share that video of that snow?
I know, Patty. But
it's
just
absurd.
Okay,
so
but then,
you took the video and then you blocked the guy from driving away?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do news stories about you people.
That's what I said.
We didn't block him. I mean, he could have driven around us.
Patty,
it's not like I put my body in front of his car. I just told him I've called the police, and they're on their way.
You blocked his exit, and then you videotaped him, and he came up to you during that videotaping.
Yeah.
I asked you off the air, were you worried about this?
Yeah, there was a moment where I realized maybe I'd acted a little too soon. You know, I'm like, maybe I should stay in the car, wait for the authorities. And that is what you should always do. Wait for the police. If you feel that there's a danger to yourself and others, you should definitely wait
oh,
for law enforcement.
Oh, great advice.
I know.
Was your husband with you at the time?
Yeah, he just is like, oh, here we go. I mean, he's so used to it.
That's like, him every day,
he's
though.
Like my handler. Yeah, he's like, okay.
I wonder if in a situation like that, a couple such as you and your husband say, or anybody, when they decide to do something extraordinary like you did, videotaping him, blocking his car, I wonder if you physically size the guy up before you make the decision to do that.
Interesting. That wasn't something I took into account. I've been hit from behind at stoplights, in intersections, and I've never been hit by a woman. I will say that first of all. And whenever it's always been men, and I was hit once when I was pregnant with Griffin, and had to be removed by the police department.
Seriously?
Yeah. And they always get out of the car and start yelling at me. This gentleman actually did not start yelling, but
okay.
He was.
John, I'm going to ask you a question, John.
Go ahead, Steve.
So how many times have you been rear-ended?
3, 4, 5,
yeah.
6.
I don't care. If
I was driven off of, I was on I-90.
Just a simple question.
Yeah.
So how many times do you think?
About 6.
So how many times do you get to before it starts to maybe be your fault?
Well, one guy was on amphetamines and anti-anxiety medication.
Well, okay, there's one.
When you're at a stoplight, I don't really know where I'm supposed to go.
I don't know many people who've been hit 6 times from behind.
Steve, I think by definition, if you're rear-ended, the person behind you is going
how can
too
I,
fast.
You know what I asked? You know what, Steve?
If you lock up your brakes.
Hold on. I asked the police officer when the state trooper came to the hospital, because they had to pry open the car to get me out.
I just want you to know I'm a lot more sympathetic about your situation than Steve.
I asked the state trooper, because I felt the same way, Steve. I'm like, how does this keep happening to me? Because I was driven across 3 lanes of traffic spinning, thinking I would not see my kids for Thanksgiving, that my sons were going to lose their mom, waiting for another car to hit me. And I asked the trooper, how could I have avoided this? He goes, don't be in front of the guy who's not able to drive or manage his vehicle.
Right, which is,
so I don't
in
know
other
what
words,
you,
there's nothing you can do about that. But don't be mad at Steve.
Oh, I am.
Evidently.
Don't shame me.
We asked you to text and call. Who do you think was the heavy in that Delta Airline video, which has gone viral? It's been seen a couple of million times. A woman that worked for Governor Cuomo was upset. They kicked her off the plane. I don't think the flight attendant had to do that. And I'm not crazy about the lady that posted the video and shamed her. It may cost her a job. From 847, the heavy on this story is clearly the lady with the crying baby. But the next one says, no, it was the woman on the power trip that she videoed. And this person says, no, it was the flight attendant that kicked her off. So
everybody's got a different one.
Everybody has a different opinion about that. Mm-hmm. One quick phone call before we take a break. Hey, Carol, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to say that I believe the passenger was a heavy. And, you know, you have to look at it as a flight attendant. How is that person going to react if that baby were to continue crying during that flight and when they're airborne?
The woman, yeah, that was on the power trip, yeah. I think everybody behaved badly. Everybody behaved badly in this story. But if I had to start, clearly the woman on the power trip, the passenger, was the one that got this thing going. So if you can't chill, then, I mean, what if we have turbulence? Hell, we're on the ground right now, lady. Are you kidding me? So thanks for the call.
She already stated that she was stressed. So if you're stressed out, you're in the air, you got no place to go, a baby's crying, how is she going to act? And, you know, for the safety of everybody around, it's probably better she should get off the plane.
And then she gets all apologetic. Oh, please, I'm sorry. I can't miss this flight. Oh, yes, you can.
Too late, lady.
You're going to miss this flight.
See, me and Carol on the same page.
Well, that's all the call will take. Just end it there on an up note for you.
Blame Steve Bertrand for saying that I'm the...
I was just asking a question.
I think, though, by definition, Steve, anytime you're rear-ended, that's... The person in front of you has the
But legally, I didn't bring it up because of this, but I was involved in a rear-end collision, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago or more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I hit the kid from behind, and his mom got out and scolded him because he was too quick to hit the brakes.
Yes. Oh, really?
No,
but I still got the ticket.
Yeah, well,
and it still was my responsibility. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, legally, but
no. Oh, I see what you're saying. So none of my rear endings were the result of my slamming on the brakes. Three of them were at complete stops at a stoplight.
Still, you got to admit. You know,
four now because of this with this one last
Patty,
week.
The only exception I take with what you're trying to get past Bertrand is that
logic.
You think is that you think it is men that tend to drive too close
no,
and
no,
rear-end
no.
people.
My 100% of the time that I've been hit has been all
men. And it's happened several hundred times to you, so you think that there's something going on there, but I think over the course of your lifetime, those numbers are going to even themselves out. Mm. That you will hopefully be rear-ended by some women, too.
By the way, my husband was rear-ended the day after we got hit by this guy in the parking lot.
Are you kidding?
I am not kidding you.
Do you guys have a bumper sticker that says, come on, bring her on up?
That's right.
Maybe you have magnets in your bumper.
Have you checked on the magnetism of your bumper?
Three different cars over 20 years.
The very magnetic Patty Vasquez. Nice to see you, Patty.
Thank you for having me.
Hoffman Estates.
Mm-hmm.
5352 at the airports. 52, 54 by the lake. Let's throw out the lake.
Okay, we'll throw out the lake.
54. So it's 52 or it's got to be 52 or 53.
Okay, 52 or 53. Do we have a winner?
I think it's hotter.
53. You think it's higher than 53?
Violetta.
I'm going to go 53, final answer.
47 degrees.
Ah, that's not even fair.
Sorry. But you weren't close even with the other guests.
I'll appreciate
it. See how quickly she turned on you there?
You don't have to judge my judging. You all done with your news and whatever that was, Steve?
Yes. Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN.
One of the best things they do in the Olympics is they do, and they should do this more, and they should do this with more than one sport. Too much of the Olympics is watching individuals do things. A skier goes down. A skater skates. A sledder sleds. We're so used to watching eight lanes of athletes run down a track and you can see who's winning. But you don't get the competing teams or athletes on the ice or the snow at the same time. Hardly ever. You do with cross, but mostly you don't. But what they do is they take video of somebody going down the giant slalom hill. And then they superimpose that on video of another person. So you see them skating side by side, sometimes skiing side by side, sometimes right through each other, mind you. But it's so cool. I don't know if they could do that with two, three, four of them. I love that technology. It's really terrific. Props to NBC. And I'm coming around to some of the announcers, too. I didn't recognize a lot of them.
It's good. When's the closing announcement? Are you closing ceremony?
Yeah, just about the time that they're wrapping this up. I'm going, I think these people are pretty good. Last night, Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski were on. They had nothing to do, but because they're Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski, they had them on. They actually had them just like mugging for the camera and being Johnny Weir and his clothes and his hair. I've never seen such a human spectacle as this man. He's spectacular. And, yeah. I really have come around. I love him. I do too. He is just a force of nature, and he doesn't care. And Tara is just as adorable and really attractive as he is. I mean, they're really quite the combination. Unfortunately for, say, NBC or the human species, we just don't have that much for them to do. So they just kind of put them on camera sometimes and let them, you know, talk.
Didn't a costume fall off or something during ice dancing yesterday?
It did. They did have a wardrobe malfunction. And it was a team that was young and expected to do well. They were dominating this season, as I heard. And then he reached up to do a spin with her and accidentally sort of snapped the elastic around her neck. So now the only thing holding her top on as she's doing this ice dancing are the thin straps around her shoulders. At one point, she put her hand up to her body to sort of hold her outfit on. Imagine trying to skate and dance and hold your clothes up at the same time.
I'd be done if that happened to me.
Incidentally, her partner, Justin Timberlake. A lot of people didn't realize.
I did not know that.
This year. Yeah.
Really?
I was actually in a dance competition and my pants, I flew right out of my pants. And I had to do the rest of the number just in a nude leotard. It was really weird.
I'd imagine that would
was
be.
That last week, Violetta, or
no,
when was that?
No, it was back in the day when I competed.
God, that's everybody's nightmare, you know, or you find yourself
I
naked.
I felt liberated.
Or underdressed in some way. Leslie Jones, the Saturday Night Live, I'll say star, ensemble player, whatever she is, has been watching the Olympics. She puts her phone up and videotapes the Olympics on TV and then just does running commentary.
And I love it.
So here's a little Leslie Jones for you.
What happens after you get into this? Are you steering it or are you along for
the
ride?
This is the bobsled.
So whatever the sled does, that's what you gonna do, right? Are they driving it? Do they got a little bitty steering wheel in there? And how does it stop?
She just goes on like that. And a lot of people are watching the Olympics and her at the same time and liking what she has to say. What is she talking about next here, Elif?
There's one about a certain hit song. It was like on top on YouTube.
Somebody need to tell them that there is another song out there other than Damn Despacito. I am so tired of hearing
She's
Despacito.
She's watching the dancers.
I am tired of Despacito. I am desperate not to hear Despacito no more. Do y'all know that there's more Spanish music out there that you actually can use? I would have loved to hear La Bamba. Anything but Despacito.
Leslie Jones watching somebody ice dance to Despacito. I think the clothes that the skaters and dancers wear are spectacular. Good Lord, those are handsome specimens, those skaters and dancers, ice dancers and ice skaters. She's not loving the clothes, though, that they're wearing.
Hey, I just want to ask all the skating teams, are y'all mad at me or something? Because obviously y'all mad at me because y'all wearing these outfits. You're just not trying anymore.
I think the outfits are fantastic.
And she was actually referring to this, I think it was Tessa Virtue.
Yeah, that's an American. What a great name, Virtue. Tessa Virtue. I love that name. Longtime skater.
And she was wearing this orange wraparound that you start from your back and then you wrap it around your neck. Mm-hmm. And she was wearing a black skirt with it.
She wasn't loving it.
Very simple, which is what I liked about it.
Leslie Jones was not having it.
Does she like anything?
Evidently not. I mean, I don't know. Elif, you've watched more of these videos than I. Is she ever saying how much she loves something? Like, wow, this is awesome. Is she also applauding some things?
Yeah, she tends towards the princessy looks more.
Oh, the more frilly ones. Huh? Mm-hmm. The president had a tweet this weekend, which I just thought was remarkable. And I know we all talk a lot about the president around here, and we all get tired of it as soon as we start it. But I think something needs to be said about one tweet in particular in a minute. The president tweeted the following. It says here on his official Twitter account, very sad that the FBI missed all of the many signals sent out by the Florida school shooter. This is not acceptable. They are spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. There is no collusion. Get back to the basics and make all of us proud. Just wondering what your reaction is to that. So I don't know how else to read that. If we would stop investigating the president and the election hack, which, by the way, could be separate things, I want the FBI or anybody that can figure out how the Russians meddled with our election to figure that out. If it takes you to the campaign, fine. If it doesn't, don't you still want them to know if the election was hacked, how and what we can do to stop it? Don't you want a thorough investigation of that? So anybody and everybody on the Hill that's doing that, I applaud that. And if it's the FBI too, you guys just keep doing what you're doing. Now, I might feel differently about that if I actually thought that the FBI were so understaffed that the people that are doing that could have been looking for a shooter in Florida. I don't know how they assign their responsibilities, but I don't think that if you stop doing one, you will get the other. But there's the president saying, sad the FBI missed the many signals sent out by the shooter. This is not acceptable. They're spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion. So I'm just wondering what your reaction to that is. And we'll start with, looks like Mark's on line one. Mark, jump in there. What did you want to say?
I think it's a very divisive action. It's very selfish. It speaks to his immaturity. This is not an act of leadership. It's disgusting, and it's very sad.
Thanks for the phone call. We'll go from you to line two. That's who's next here. Ron, you're on WGN. Ron, you're on the air.
Yeah, they can do two things at once. This is not rocket science in terms of, you know, just focused on him. But the reality is I heard that, they get 1,000 notifications a day about problems with children and people who will go out and do things that are need mental health supervision. So to think that the beginning of a statement may be true, but the end of it isn't.
Thanks for the phone call. I just think about that. Very sad. I mean, the president of the United States, and all of us are trying to process this. What had happened and how do we feel? And golly, we were all just sick about it. And he immediately turns it to, well, if you'd stop investigating me. That's I don't know if you're keeping a list at home of wow tweets, but that one should be on there, huh? It's 2:55. Ro and Anna stroll into the studio in a couple of minutes on WGN. This is just the difference between Ro Khan and normal people. And by the way, that could be a very long conversation.
That's true.
Some of it good, some of it not.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're just all visiting in the studio. Sylvia Perez is in the studio. Hello.
Hi. It's so nice to meet you in person. I listen to you all the time.
Likewise. I see you on TV. Yes. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Helping roll out. Anna's not here today.
She's helping me out. Mm-hmm. For years, Sylvia has taken me under her wing and tried to make me into something, and it never really, really worked out. But
I do what I can, you
yes,
know?
But that's so what she does.
We're chatting off the air, and we said, what did you do the weekend? And Ro goes, nothing really. Didn't do much. Oh, yeah, I went to Everest. I said, if I go to Everest, you will know it before. I will call you at home. And
not
tell
Mount
you.
Everest, the restaurant. Yes. Everest. It's a different. It's also like Mount Everest.
Am I overstating Everest? I thought that was pretty fancy.
It's nice. It's very nice.
That's the real deal.
Very fancy, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did you get? Did you get the French fries?
Yeah, I got the French fries. I got a cheeseburger. You guys get grilled cheese. I don't like a cheese pizza.
It cost him $1,400, by
the way.
You
know, there are people who do that, you know, who go to the restaurants, and you take them to these, I don't want anything, you know. I just, whatever they throw at me, I eat.
Right.
Because it's, you don't know. And mm-hmm. if they explain it to you, it gets even worse.
Just bring it on. Was that a Valentine's romantic dinner?
It was a dinner. It was a dinner. It was a dinner on the week of Valentine's Day. Some might argue.
You're such a guy.
Some might argue. Some might not. It depends.
Brenda and I were looking at the James Beard nominees. 28 restaurants and chefs in Chicago represented.
Yet.
Yeah, it's a nice list of, you know, places you wouldn't recognize. But I said, I wonder if we went to some of these places, would I appreciate it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, because really, I'd like a steak and potato. Mm-hmm. I can get that at a lot of places.
Some are better than others, though.
I don't know if I would appreciate the money or even the art of their cuisine.
If you got it for free, you'd appreciate it.
Wow.
Oh,
wow, have you been in radio before?
I'm going to say you are going to fit in just fine here, lady.
That is like the radio thing. It's like that's what radio free over good.
Oh my god.
Yeah, we'll do it. All right.
Have a really good show.
Thank you,
guys.
John.